Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
From Autosport.com and Autosport Magazine, I'm Martin Lee, and this is the Autosport Podcast. Well, welcome along to our half-term report card as our team of experts look at the drivers, the teams, the cars and give their verdicts on how we've gone so far at the summer break, over halfway through the season. And because this is Formula One, we like to overcomplicate things. So we have the Autosport driver ratings. That's the scores that we give the drivers after every event. Obviously, the readers of the website, autosport.com, can also give a score, and that differs slightly to what we give it. And then we've also gone back, knowing what we know now about the various things that were happening for drivers and teams, and kind of re-ranked them a little bit with the knowledge that we've got halfway through the season. So as it's Formula One, let's overcomplicate things from the very beginning. I'm joined by our panel of experts, by Matt Q, Alex Kalanorkis and Luke Smith. We have the driver ratings done every Sunday night. What have you done at the summer break to kind of look back and just kind of look at those scores a little bit?
I don't know about you, Alex, but mine tend to drift into Monday morning when I'm doing them. But what we've done is, like you say, we collate the order. We have an average rating, and at this point in the season, we can see exactly where we put them and rank them. And there's a few changes. So if site one we'll come on to is Hamilton, by our ratings, is behind Russell, but for the half-time report, we put him above. And it's because like things come to light that we didn't know at, you know, midnight the night of when we were writing a report. So one of those is when he had that patch where he was behind Russell and the mainstream media went, oh, he's lost it, Russell's dethroned him and whatever. Well, we now know that that's because his experience, Mercedes really lent on to sort of try and troubleshoot the W13. So as they put it, he was on wild experimental setups. And Russell had, you know, the easier to drive car for those races, which explain those gaps. And other things that come to light is when you have a bit more time and you've got off your plane and whatever and you have a few hours going spare, because we're sad people, you can go through the race data and really isolate the pace. So on the days when the W13 has been good, it's invariably been Hamilton that's been the quicker of the two drivers. So that's just a snapshot, but it's all about, you know, we can look at bigger picture and go thematically rather than just what happened in the heat of the moment.
Alex, how are you feeling at the summer break?
I think it's been two different things. It's been wildly successful in terms of the new rules,
everyone's very interested. We've finally got through in terms of the COVID races, people not being able to attend. It's very popular, Formula One. On the other hand, the title fight is over, effectively. You know, Ferrari looked to be the ones that was going to run away with it. Looking just at the results, remember, both the Red Bulls didn't finish in Bahrain, Max Verstappen out in Australia. But then it's turned around so quickly, and it's becoming a frustrating season, because it's just Red Bull. I think, Matt, you had a great stat coming out of Hungary that if Leclerc wins every race, if he gets the fastest lap bonus point in each of them, if he wins the final sprint race, he can score 420 points. That's the actual maximum he can score. Max Verstappen can hit that total with second places in every single race. Now, obviously, wherever he finishes, as long as it's in the points in the sprint race, he would win it. He'd be a point ahead. But it just shows you the scale of it. And also, I think Max was asked in the press conference, I know you were there, Matt, after the Hungary race, where he's got two Mercedes behind him, it's like, well, how are you feeling? Are you more worried about Mercedes now that Ferrari keeps messing it up? And he's like, why would I be worried? They're good now. They're just going to take points off Ferrari. So it's going to get, in a weird way, even easier for him if Mercedes is coming good. And I don't see any reason why Ferrari would turn this around. It's a great car. Technically, they've produced a great car, but the execution, mainly from the team, has been pretty shocking. And Leclerc was producing one of the all-time great seasons, and really, with that stuffing it into the wall at Paul Ricard, that massively affects the driver ratings that we'll come on to. It's stained it, really, from Leclerc's point of view.
And Luke, new cars, new rules, from when you first saw them roll out in testing to where we are today, how are you feeling about the state of Formula One?
The rules have been very successful. They've done what they wanted to do, which is offer better overtaking and better on-track racing. The on-track spectacle, I think, has been really good this year. I think that midfield fight especially has been very, very close, which has been really, really exciting. And I think that it's been interesting just seeing the swings from pre-season, where we saw, I think Alex and I spoke about sort of like which teams we expect to struggle and things like that, and how much that's flipped as well. Because some teams like had a nightmare in testing and really turned things around. I think of like Alpha and Alpine. They really came on a lot stronger, I think, than anticipated. And teams like Mercedes, I mean, I think even in testing, everyone's like, oh, they do this every year, saying they're not going to be very good, and then they come out and win the first race, and then they genuinely weren't as good as Red Bull and Ferrari. So I think it's been a really good season for Formula One so far. I think that, yeah, if we had that kind of title fight that we had last year between Leclerc and Verstappen, that'd be really, really exciting. But unfortunately, it's not looking that way right now. But I think F1 itself has done everything it could, and I think can be very pleased with the results.
So, driver ratings over the course of the 13 events. Max Verstappen, number one. Charles Leclerc is the number one driver, according to the reader averages. And in terms of your half-term kind of re-ranking, is Max still top?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, that's the recent change, isn't it? We've been having this discussion sort of, you know, Leclerc was away with it. You know, the seven poles in particular, the management, the measure he had over Carlos Sainz, all like the metrics we used to determine this, he was coming out on top. His blemish was the spin in Imola, losing third place. And then along comes France, unaided error, biffed it into the wall, driver error, sort of, you know, slam dunk on that one, a catastrophic mistake. And yes, Verstappen's not been perfect. He comes out on top of this, but let's think spinning at Barcelona, and again, as we record this last weekend in Hungary. And yes, it's to do with Ferrari's strategic and reliability shortcomings, but they haven't cost wins. So the days when Verstappen spun it, so thinking of when obviously last weekend in Hungary, and also when he dropped the car in Spain. Okay, he was helped enormously by Ferrari's engine exploding and wide, and then another strategy error in the other, but he still won those races. Leclerc, obviously, huge error, headline error, buried the car in the wall, no coming back from that, race squandered. And that was potentially, we'll come to think of that as a real key point in the title race, when I think he went from potentially, if he had maintained that to the flag, he would have had a 30-second gap. He came away with a 30-point gap, sorry. He came away for a 60, so it doubled in the space of the race. It's so catastrophic. I was just debating with myself, as you do, quite a sad monologue, but whether actually so far in the season, yes, we've had the massive shunts for Schumacher, Latifi, but perhaps in terms of context, that's the biggest error we've had this season.
And how do you feel about how his season has gone in terms of at the beginning of the season? It was either, you know, hero or zero. It was either, you know, finishing first or not scoring points at all. And how the season has come on, you know, settling into that role of being a world champion.
I think he's excelled in that. I think we've seen Max take another step forward this year. And I think Christian Horner said after the race on Sunday in Hungary, it was the first time he's known Max to be quite cautious and measured in his approach. And I think we've seen maybe that little extra maturity, I think, from him. We know last year in the fight with Hamilton, he was known for those that maybe quite desperate lunges at times. We've not really seen any of that this year. The wheel-to-wheel racing between him and Leclerc has been much cleaner. And I think that Max has done very well to pick up good points, even on days where he's not been the quickest driver or they've had the quickest car. And I think of Austria as being the perfect example of that. Red Bull did not have the car to win that race, but Max still came home in second and picked up the points. You look at a race like Hungary, Ferrari didn't have the car to win that race. Leclerc finished sixth. Like, it's just things like that. That is the difference between the two of them right now. Max has made, I mean, he's not been perfect. There's been errors, even in Hungary with the spin, with Spain as well. There have been mistakes, but he has been largely very, very clean. And I think we've really seen him, yeah, grow into this sort of like world champion mold, which is quite nice to see. I think a bit like Sebastian Vettel. Like, he won his first championship in 2010 in very dramatic fashion. It was a bit of a rough and ready season. Whereas then coming into this year, coming into 2011, Seb just took another step forward. And I think we've seen that from Max. He was brilliant last year, don't get me wrong. But this year, we've just seen him have that extra measure, I think, about him.
I'm going to disagree with you ever so slightly. I think in certain ways, he has definitely stepped up. For example, we haven't seen the outrageous moves that we saw last year. We have seen a little bit still of questionable decision-making. Specifically, yeah, the end at Silverstone. I think there also were a few moments where early on with Leclerc in that race where, by the letter of the law, he was entirely correct, but he was still very bullshy. Fair enough. You know, that's Max Verstappen to a T, but that did seem to be a weird one. Like, yeah, he was on a recovery drive there, but why he felt the need to defend so aggressively, bearing in mind that was a race where Ferrari had totally stuffed it for Leclerc in terms of winning the race ahead of him. But also with Max, there are surprising, disappointing notes to his season, but it's nuanced and it wraps in Perez as well, right? If we think of that street race run, particularly Monaco and Azerbaijan, Max was, well, in terms of the pure results, he's blown away in Monaco and he wins in Azerbaijan, but it's not as simple as that, because basically what you'd expect and what has largely come out and what has largely happened since they've improved the car is that Max has totally on top of Perez, but there he wasn't, because he was undone by the fact that the ground effect cars aren't very good in low speed corners. He doesn't like the understeer, and that's made worse by the front tires on the Pirellis not being. It's not that they're up to standard. It's basically when they had the mule cars for last year that the data didn't say that this understeer was going to be a thing. So it's there. Max couldn't cope with that as you would have expected him to do, and that enabled Perez to get in front of him. But actually, this whole Perez is having a mega season and look at what he's doing there. I personally think that's not the correct look, because Verstappen was on course to qualify ahead of him in Monaco when Perez crashed. Now, that's a big error from Perez, but it saved his session. Max should have qualified ahead. If everything plays out as it did on Sunday, he wins the Monaco Grand Prix, and it's very different. But it's still weird that he allowed that to happen at that point. I think the difference with Leclerc was that he got this new car and he got on top of it immediately. Carlos Sainz took a long time to do it. And there have been times recently where Sainz has been able to get ahead of Leclerc. And it makes me wonder whether, it demonstrates that Sainz is very good at recovery, but maybe Leclerc's head is starting to drop. And that's also a factor which I'm sure we're going to come on to. I think you've got to take that into consideration when it comes to things like the Paul Ricard error, which I agree with you that what is the biggest error of the season. But Max hasn't had to fight against his team. Like, that it's not like, you know, Leclerc's going rogue with Ferrari, but he's got that in the back of his mind to cope with, whereas Red Bull have just delivered.
Yeah.
And they will, and it's a similar story with Mercedes. Ferrari really have let Leclerc down, and I think that has impacted his driving.
And can we talk a little bit about consistency as well to finish off on Max? Because until Hungary, when the team let him down in terms of qualifying, he hadn't started a race off the front two rows of the grid. So although he might not have always excelled in qualifying, it seems like his consistency this year, if it hasn't always been obvious at the time, when you look back halfway through or at the summer break at his qualifying results, he was always there or thereabouts to put himself, apart from Hungary, in a position to then go and either get the win or challenge. So a bit on consistency, if anyone's got any thoughts on that, and maybe a bit on his racecraft and things like tyre management as well. There's been races like where Miami or he's made tyres work where others didn't. So kind of moving into that role that Lewis Hamilton gets a lot of credit for, which is as he matured as a driver, being able to really work with this era of tyres. So anyone want to chip in with thoughts on that?
Well, I can talk about his qualifying runs, and the consistency is there because he's obviously operating at such a high level. The reason he's not quite been challenging Leclerc so relentlessly is you can put in a large part down to the machinery. So that is the RB18 certainly started this season, I think it's between 10 and 20 kilos over the minimum weight limit, which is 798 kilos dry car and driver included. That's obviously come down now with upgrades, but it's still over. And the way that works is obviously it's heavier, so you know it takes more to get it around a corner, but it particularly comes to a head in the final stint of a race and in qualifying, because that's when the car is at its lightest, so fuel is burnt off. So that weight it is over the limit contributes a greater percentage. So that's where he's most exposed against the Ferrari. And then it just comes back to the way he manages his tyres, like Alex is saying with the Pirellis. There's been a general struggle with temperatures through a lot of them. But he's actually, you know, Perez, his teammate, is a renowned tyre whisperer. It's almost what he sort of... based his career around at the early, especially like 2011, 2012 when these chocolate tyres first came in. But he's actually dropped the ball in those areas. That's why in Baku, the team said, get out of the way, Sergio, let Max come through. It's because during the safety car, he let his tyres drop too much and then they turn to like granite and they just behave really differently. And Verstappen has nailed that. But again, certainly since the upgrade, that's a shortcoming with the RB18, the way it behaves, its tyres behave compared to the F175. So I think what's impressed me so much is that there are the flaws there in the car. It is difficult to distinguish at times between driver and car, but I think he's doing a better job of driving around those.
Well, so just on the tyre management, I think that was something that's always kind of been underrated in Verstappen's game.
Really?
I think there's like, if you look at some of the races in 2020, then that Mercedes car is going to go down, the W11, as one of the greatest cars of all time. Head of the Belgian Grand Prix, go back and watch what it did 2 years ago. It's just unbelievable. Max is the only one that could keep up with him. And he's not like 30 seconds behind, he's only 10 seconds behind, which is, I mean, it sounds a lot, but it's still a phenomenal achievement. And a lot of that was to do with the fact that, okay, maybe he found it a little bit boring not being able to push, but he's very good at that. And I think that served him well in races like Miami, where Ferrari's weakness there was exposed. But he was better, as Matt says, than Perez in Baku, which surprised a lot of people. So yeah, fair play to him.
Any final thoughts on Max?
We're seeing, I think, a driver evolve into more and more of his greatness. I think the legacy he's building, I mean, he's already in, what, 20 odd wins? Like, he's gonna blow past so many records. Like, Lewis's records are impressive, but they're not safe. Like, the way Max is going, he's already got 8 wins this season. The record's 13 for a year. And I know we're getting into longer seasons and stuff like that. Yeah. But yeah, we're seeing, I think, the start of someone growing into a lot of record making.
Double world champion is a heck of a thing to achieve for any driver. So that is rarefied air he's breathing there. Let's move on. This is interesting. Second place in the Autosport average driver ratings, George Russell with an 8.31 and the reader average 8.11. And yet George is fourth, 100 points off, is that right? Max in the championship standings. And another driver where we talk about consistency, hasn't finished outside the top five. Sometimes those performances are a bit under the radar. Silverstone, obviously, the exception. They wouldn't let him restart, much to his annoyance. But apart from Silverstone, enormously consistent. Now, Matt, where have you got George Russell? At the minute, second in our half-term report, in the kind of rejig that you've done, knowing what we know.
We put him fourth, so obviously behind Leclerc.
Championship order, is that right? He's fourth championship order.
Yeah, behind Leclerc and behind Hamilton. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One is that, yes, he's got some great results, obviously the consistent run of top five results, but, and I understand why they look so impressive, because we know that car is bad, but it is reliable. And so when Ferrari are dropping the ball, when Carlos Sainz has a stinker, which he did in the early part of the season, they're there to pick up the pieces. And so you've got to work that out against how impressive a job he is doing. And like I say, at the race by race, when we were looking at these originally, we're thinking, well, yeah, he has put Hamilton in the shade a little bit, but we now know that's because he was given the easier car to drive. So I think that explains some of the difference why we perhaps dragged him down a bit. But that's not to say we have a downer. It's been a hugely impressive season. And man, he's going up against a 7-time world champion. No one expects him to come in. And actually, this is a bit of a wider point, he'd be a bit of a fool if he came in his first season, tried to upset the established pecking order. So I think he's done a sublime job. But
it's us equally holding our, it's not us saying we know better than our readers necessarily, it's us taking a step back and going, actually what we thought at the time, I think in the moment was accurate, and we try so hard with these driver ratings, but I think also holding our hands up and go, bigger picture here, we probably need to just have a little reassessment there.
Okay. And the key thing here is, as Matt said earlier, is that Hamilton's highs are higher than Russell's. So for example, like that race recovery in Spain, the pace there was absolutely phenomenal. Lewis in Hungary just at the weekend, tremendous. And again at Paul Ricard, actually it went a little bit under the radar, but he was terrific there, and that was a real example of why Perez is down the order in our averages, because it's the comparison to the teammates, and Lewis led the line there. So yeah, I think that's why Lewis has got to be ahead. I'm sure we're going to come on to him in a minute, but yeah, fantastic for Russell. And what's been really interesting is that lots of people, you know, Luke, you and I in 2020 and 2021, we're saying, yep, Russell's as mega as we expected him to be in Formula 1. Everyone's like, well, he's in a Williams. How can you say that? How can you compare? And now he's in a Mercedes and he's doing exactly the same thing and delivering. So, it's interesting. You know, he's like, it's almost like we know what we're talking about.
That pole position is a case in point of what we're talking about. It's that Carlos Sainz had purple first sector, made a mistake in second sector, purple third sector. So his peaks are better in the fastest car. Russell had three personal best sectors, so green, green, green. So did the best he could in a slower car and was there to pick up the pieces. So that's actually a prime example of what we're trying to say about Russell.
Okay. And just very quickly, racecraft as well. Remember that Spanish Grand Prix fight with Verstappen?
Max, yeah.
Who gave as good as he got, or you know, as good as he'd expect to get from Verstappen. He can do it. He can really do it, Russell.
Yeah. George Russell, your thoughts, Luke, on his season?
Well, if I may plug this month's issue of GP Racing magazine.
You may plug it.
Has, do, because it's got some of my work in it.
Yes, yeah, it's a very, very good issue. sorry, Q. And it's about George and his start with Mercedes. And I think I've said it's like the idea of, oh, is George Britain's next world champion? That's not a new, like, I've written that feature before, but in the context of this Mercedes season, how he has started with the team, I think it becomes a new conversation. And yeah, he is as good as what we expected, but it is also how he's adjusted to that new environment. And he has become, I think he's just taken another step forward. And yeah, I think Hungary was brilliant, just what we saw him do on Saturday. That fight with Max in Spain, yeah, that is, I think, one of the big moments of the season where we went, oh, hang on, like, George is, he's here now, like, he's fighting at the front, he's able to give as good as he gets against a driver of Max's caliber. So yeah, he's been brilliant this season. And I know, sort of looking ahead to the end of the year and the Autosport top 50 that you guys will put together, George is going to be very, very high up there, I think, if he continues at this current rate.
He's added 5 trophies to the Mercedes trophy cabinet this year, but none of them is the big one for getting the top step. What do you reckon? How long until he wins his first race with Mercedes? And what will it take to win that? Is he going to do that on his own talent and pace and the Mercedes coming good? Or is it going to be one of those results that relies on somebody ahead retiring? What do you think?
I think it can be done on merit. Yeah. I think as we go into the second half of this season, particularly with the technical directive coming in for Spa, there's sort of questions about how that's going to adjust the pecking order at the front. And yeah, Mercedes, they're clearly getting around the issues they've had with this car. The bouncing issues, they're under control now. So
I think
we've
forgotten about that as well, by the way.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it was the start of the season. Yeah. Obviously, there's that famous shot of Lewis, Azerbaijan, not getting out of his car for a long time, which took a lot of headlines. But people forget both of those cars in the first few races were causing the drivers pain.
Yeah, it's been a tricky, tricky start, and they've still managed to come around to that, and the team has worked it out, and now it's a case of, okay, how do we find more performance now? How do we add to that? So, no, I reckon both Mercedes drivers will win a race before the end of the season. I reckon it will be on merit, but also, yeah, those races where maybe Ferrari and Red Bull do drop the ball ever so slightly and it plays towards Mercedes' favour, as I think we saw in Hungary. I thought the pace on that Sunday was very, very good. So, yeah, I think they're in a really good spot now.
And talking
I'm
more.
Slightly more pessimistic.
Oh, okay, go on.
In terms of the key point there that you made, Luke, is the changes coming for Hungary, right? So the underfloor tests that the FIA, everything they're looking at, the changes to the holes around the plank and the bits that suggested have been moving up and down at certain teams. If that has a massive impact, then yeah, Mercedes, you'd expect to be right back in the game. They may have to make their own changes as well, or they may be making them as we speak. Well, you know, they've only got a few days before the shutdown comes into effect. Because at the moment we can only talk about what we've seen so far, and I don't think on pure pace either of them can get there. Even Hamilton, I don't think they can win a race. I think that people were talking them up in Paul Ricard. I never thought that was likely to be a realistic place where they could have won, and they were a massive way behind. That said, Red Bull have had reliability problems. So that if Verstappen has a reliability problem, when Ferrari inevitably messes up the race for its drivers, when Perez is absent, that's when they're going to be in there. And we've seen the last couple of years, there's always at least one really, really crazy race. And it wasn't quite Monaco because that was a wet weather race. You can't really overtake there. There will be something happening later on in the season, surely. So that's where you'd expect with a reliable car, with one that isn't porpoising and bouncing around so horrendously, that's where they'll take their opportunities.
And I think it's also worth noting that they have improved, certainly, you know, since Silverstone, Austria, France, Hungary, there's been on this upward trajectory. But as Friday in Hungary shows, they're not infallible. They still get it wrong massively. And then suddenly the car's bouncing, it's slow, it's a second off the pace. And then that means the first day when they're banking all that data is lost to ruin. And they're relying on radical overnight changes for Russell to get that pole and then not knowing how the car will behave. So they might be presented an opportunity when, and I know this is harsh, but I think for Hamilton and Russell to win, you need three drivers not to be up there. And okay. Perez is, I would not have Perez among that list. But if they're there to capitalise, they need to have a flawless weekend, and they're still not having those with that difficult car.
Okay, let's talk about flawless weekends then. And we get on to Charles Leclerc, third place in the Autosport driver ratings, 8.15 average score. The readers put him first. This is two places different, 8.43. So how does that compare to how you've rejigged the order mid-season?
We put him second, and in terms of the way we're doing this feature specifically for the mag, we're giving him a school-type grade. So he's an A to Max Verstappen's A+, but he's also on an A with Hamilton and Russell, so in that ballpark. But of the A's, some animals are more equal than the others. I think Leclerc's right. A is a better A than probably Hamilton and Russell's. For
that makes no sense at all. But I know what you mean by it, because what a season he's had. So we begin in Bahrain, won the race, fastest lap, pole position, and then second place, fastest lap. Then Australia, won the race, fastest lap, pole position, and what an amazing start to the season. And we have a season on our hands now. Ferrari have a great car and a driver who is delivering. And then it all starts to fall apart a little bit. It's been fascinating to watch as being impartial, and also a bit heartbreaking if you're a nice person and want him to do well. But what are your thoughts, Alex, on Leclerc?
Well, I wrote a column, I think it might have been after the Austrian Grand Prix, maybe it was just before then, but it was around there, where I said Leclerc is producing one of the great Formula One seasons. And I absolutely stand by that, because up to that point, it was. And the only thing that sets him apart, and the reason why he comes down the number in the ratings, why he is behind Max Verstappen now at the half-term report that Matt's compiling, because we've been through this together and agreed on it, is the error in France. Know what? We said it earlier in the podcast. It's the biggest error of the season. Verstappen just hasn't done that. Russell and Hamilton haven't made those massive errors either. But it was almost sort of wrenching for everyone watching it, because it was just like, how has that happened? You know, I've spoken earlier about how I think he is compensating for the team's deficiencies, but also this is Leclerc's story. Like, up to now, look at all those accidents in 2019, look how hard he is on himself. We saw it in Imola. It was nowhere near as big a mistake, and he was trying. He was trying to catch Perez. You know, the Ferrari isn't as good at that point. That weekend, there's a clutch problem that the team have talked about. They've been fixing lately. That really hurt them in the wet in Imola. He drops behind the Red Bull early on. But yeah, it was a brilliant season, and it still will be a brilliant season, but it's just not going to be the all-time great season now because of that error. Even if he'd gone valiantly, won the race in France, still lost the title to Max Verstappen by 80-odd points because of his team's errors and the unreliability, that's fantastic. That is genuinely one of the greatest seasons you're ever going to see. Right now, it still can be really good, but it's not going to... It's got that massive error in it, and you can't really come back from that.
Yeah.
No, and I think that is what's spoiled Leclerc's season. I think you guys are absolutely on the money there, and it's a shame because he had been performing so, so well. And despite all of the issues, sort of Ferrari on strategy and reliability and things like that, he was still performing. He was still at a very high level. And again, we've seen those championship fights in the past that kind of tail off a little bit, but you say, okay, but the driver himself did all that they possibly could. And for Leclerc, that was bang on the money. And then, yeah, you see France come along and it's just like, it was such a sloppy error. And I guess that, because that goes down as is it a major mistake on your guys' rating? So what does that cap him at?
It was a 3 or 4, I think you gave him.
It was a 4 because he got pole position. Sure, so yeah, he did, because again, and this is something that when we talk about driver ratings, I mean, I'm in particularly always pains to point out, especially to people on social media who are like, why wasn't Verstappen a 10 in Hungary? But it's because we take qualifying into account. And Matt, you quite correctly pointed out, if his banker lap had been better in Q3, he wouldn't have qualified 10th. Yeah. So therefore, it's not, and also to be very clear, it's not a perfect weekend, because of course that's very subjective. It's a maximum score. So he can't score the maximum because he didn't maximise his weekend. He cost himself places there. So that's why Leclerc got a 4, because he did do something very impressive, which was stay ahead of that rocket ship down the straight Red Bull. And then he ruined it. And I put that in the rating for him there.
But we haven't got a down on Leclerc. So there's 3 performances I want to point out.
Okay.
Australia is possibly the most dominant performance by any driver this season so far, the way he blitzed everything there. Australia, which I would say Leclerc is probably not in the top 5 most intelligent drivers in Formula One. But the way he outsmarted Verstappen, like chasing for those DRS games, was brilliant. And Austria, he didn't get a 9 because he didn't qualify on pole, and then he was too, you know, embroiled with battling Sainz, which is both a strategic error and also his fault in the sprint race. But overtaking in a quicker car, but overtaking Verstappen 3 times like he did in Austria, that was such a good performance. So there is that, you know, Max has had fewer errors and his baseline's very high. Leclerc probably has the higher peaks, but also the lower troughs.
And in a way, that is the Ferrari cliche, which is hero or zero. And I don't want to fall back on that tired kind of cliche with Ferrari, but as a team, they've done it to themselves. And as a driver as well, after 13 races, 7 pole positions, and more than half the races this year, he's been the one leading the field away. And yet it's when you get into racecraft and race trim and race strategy that it seems to be the difference, because he qualified so well, or not, you know, or poorly.
His racecraft in terms of his wheel-to-wheel stuff is the best of anyone, out of all of them. What he did at Silverstone around the outside of Lewis Hamilton into cops on those older tyres is the move of the season. It's phenomenal. Yes. Also, his pass on Russell down the outside into Turn 1 at Hungary, it was absolutely terrific. So I think his racecraft wheel-to-wheel fighting, superb. His own propensity to make errors, as he's always made, is what hurts him. But Martin, you'll know this because we're doing the second series of Kevin Turner's and now other people's top 10 drivers at certain teams. Well, one day I'm going to do top 10 most heartbreaking Charles Leclerc losses. And basically,
there's going to be a lot to pick.
Basically, all of them come in 2022. You got Bahrain 2019, of course, and then you're into ranking these seasons. Oh, and of course, Monaco 2021. But again, that was his fault. That demonstrates it. He still hasn't made that progress from making those rare, but still, when they come, catastrophic errors that Verstappen, in that direct comparison, just doesn't make.
Should we move on? Any more thoughts? Okay, next, Lewis Hamilton. We rank him 4th in the Autosport driver ratings with a clean 8.00. The readers rate him 4th as well, 7.55. And where have we rejigged him, if at all?
We put him just up one spot,
so he's the 3rd.
Behind Hamilton. But as we talk about, the bigger thing there is swapping with Russell.
Yeah, because of the experiments they were doing that we now know on his setup and his car. Okay, so that makes sense. Let's talk a little bit about Lewis's season, defined early in the season, like I've mentioned already, with the bouncing and the porpoising. And also, I guess, the storyline around him coming out of the end of last season, missing out on the World Championship, deciding to stay in Formula One, and then having a really, really difficult start to the season despite appearing on the podium and being a point scorer.
Yeah, it was interesting being there in Bahrain in that press conference, because it was one of those, as we know, Luke, it's not one of those races that's wildly attended by the media, even though it was the first race. More people there for the race than the test. Sadly, not Matt, though. You're back in London by that point. With Lucy, he was in the room stretching his back out. You know, he was touching his toes. He was mocking the Ferrari drivers for not being able to do that or not being able to do it so easily, things like that. So it was a real good, it was a really interesting insight into already you could see right the impact of the porpoising, and ultimately that changes the story of his season completely. Think back to when they launched the W13 and he came out swinging. He was like, if you thought, yeah, specifically referencing the end of 2021, his races in Brazil, in Saudi Arabia, in Qatar, and in Abu Dhabi up to when the safety car comes out, he said it outright, if you thought what I did at the end of last year was good, wait until you see this year. And it was totally destroyed by the porpoising. The momentum's all taken out from under him. The Mercedes performance, as I said earlier, even right now, and maybe it's better after Belgium, but it's still not good enough for him to be winning races and winning championships. But I think potentially there is a school of thought based on what we've heard in the paddock, what listening to Lewis's words himself, by having to work so hard and by having this, you know, this new impetus of changing the team around, that might actually prolong his career ever so slightly. I genuinely could see if it had been, say, it's an exact repeat of 2021, Mercedes versus Red Bull, and he wins the eighth world title, I think maybe he walks away at that point. I think that's that he clearly wants that record. He clearly wants to avenge what happened at the end of 2021, because from his point of view, it was stolen from him. And I think to a certain extent, it's absolutely right. The problem is, it's like, well, Verstappen didn't do anything wrong. It was the circumstances, the shocking circumstances of Abu Dhabi that led to that. But actually, I still think that's the case. I think he wants to carry on until he can do that. And he's been refreshed by the fact that he's, you know, the things that he's doing with Mercedes, that's what he's got to have done this season. And he spoke about it. He said, yeah, I'm going to step away and I've still got fuel in the tank, but at the moment I am refreshed and I have got that fuel in there. So he's not going away anytime soon. And that's, I think, Formula One's better for it.
We're not used to seeing Lewis Hamilton qualifying 10th and 13th, etc. But he didn't at any point turn on the team. He didn't at any point, you know, the ultimate professional. Clearly, they've not given him the machinery he needs. It is a team sport. It's, you know, it's not a, you know, not a ball sport. Yeah, so you do need that machinery, and he hasn't had that. Toto Wolff, I thought, was very good at supporting his driver and drivers, and he took the flak. He was the figurehead. Toto came out and said, you know, both on the radio, which he knows is going to be repeated on the world feed, you know, we are not giving you the car you deserve, and also in the statements to you guys as well. So Lewis has been a real pro through all of this and kept his head up.
Completely. Now, I think you'd expect nothing less from him given his career and track record. And I think he's, when he says, like, we win and lose as a team, it may sound a bit cliched, but it's true. Like, that's how he sees it. And when they were presented with this situation at the start of the season, it was, right, how do we rally together and work together and get ourselves out of this? And there have been painful moments. You think of, yeah, the Q1 exit in Saudi Arabia, or at Imola when he was stuck toiling behind Alex Albon and Pierre Gasly outside of the points. Like, that's not Lewis Hamilton territory whatsoever. But they've worked and worked and worked. They've fought back. He's been on this really good run of form now, 5 podiums on the bounce. Spain was the big turning point when, yeah, he had that brilliant fight back through the field where his pace was absolutely, like, sensational given the sort of issues they've been having. So I think we've seen Lewis again, like, it's, if he wins that eighth title, whether it's next year or the year after that or whatever he does in the future, I think this sort of period now where they're in that rebuilding phase and sort of working things out with the car and everything, that's going to be a really important part of that story. So yeah, I think it's been good to see Lewis sort of fighting at the, I say peak of his powers, because I think he's doing all that he can.
Yeah.
Bringing that team back up to the top.
Yeah, and it's what he's saying as well. So obviously, you know, motivating by saying, oh, you guys at factory, thank you so much for what you're doing. But also, you know, again, it's really hard to isolate. But if it has been his experimental setups which have helped isolate, you know, what is really the problem with the W13, we know it's been, you know, as riding as high as it will go to eliminate it. If it's his sacrifices of, you know, provided at least an answer or light at the end of the tunnel to explain the massive upward trajectory in form, he deserves an enormous amount of credit for that, because it's his, he's been a sacrificial lamb in that, and they've relied on his experience. So as much as it's been the design team back at Brackley going, you know, this is where it's not correlated between the wind tunnel test and what actually happens in reality, his input in that has been invaluable.
Yeah, and interesting that all great eras come to an end, but his doesn't seem to be. You know, we've talked on recent podcasts in the driver market last week on our podcast about names like Alonso and Vettel and knowing when it's time to stop, and it's very rare to do a Rosberg and stop at the top. But with Hamilton, again, you know, if you go through eras of domination, Schumacher era, Vettel era, Hamilton era, you end up with that lazy criticism that, well, it's just the car. So in some way, in a few years' time, we look back at Lewis Hamilton when he's not racing. This period has almost, and you wouldn't wish it on anyone, has almost done him good because he's had some adversity. And I think we sometimes we like an adversity story, especially if he can start winning races and even next year challenge for a title again. It kind of gets rid of that. And okay, at Mercedes, he had that battle with Rosberg. But still, once you go on a long run, you get that criticism of, well, are you that good? Like Vettel had it. Are you that good? It's all the car, isn't it? So maybe this could be a good thing, Alex, for... I know he wouldn't want it, but it could be a good thing.
Yeah, I think it would show his other talents, as Matt was alluding to. But I think also with the it's just the car thing, it's always more nuanced because to a certain extent, it is the car. Like the Mercedes is massively off the pace of the Red Bull and the Ferrari, but it's what you do with it that counts. And you know, I think early on, Lewis was made to look worse than he was. And right now, he's probably potentially making it look better than it is in some circumstances. And I think in terms of the success run that he's been on, there have been really complete weekends, things that Russell hasn't quite been able to do just yet. And he's still showing his class. He's showing it off the track as well with his statements and with the things that he's putting together. And what a run. I mean, he hasn't been off the podium since, what, Azerbaijan? So it's going very well.
Now, if we don't spend as long on the next set of drivers on this podcast, it's not because they're any, you know, better or worse, but simply the interest is in the battle at the front. Some of them are a little bit worse. Let's talk a little bit about Lando Norris, who we put in fifth place, and the average of the Autosport driver ratings, Lando 7.38. The readers, pretty much the same, 7.42. Nira's, damn it, what have we done with our rejig halfway through the season?
Kept him in the same position.
Same fifth.
Same position, but again, by the school grade, he's just one below sort of Russell and Hamilton, and I can explain a little bit of that, and it will also preview what we've done with Ricciardo. You know, when your teammate's your biggest benchmark, if you're mastering him, that's going to put you up the order, because that's you know, a huge part of what we go on, as well as, you know, individual performances. And then it also makes Ricciardo look a lot worse than he is. But for what Norris has done with the McLaren, it's a clear backward step. You know, this scrap for fourth in the constructors between McLaren and Alpine has a better car, just can't execute a race or strategy. But the McLaren is not as good. It's inverse all the previous problems of McLaren, where, you know, their particular Achilles here was low speed corners. Here it's a medium and high speed where it sort of falls apart, which is why, you know, the unexpected podium in Imola is so impressive, because it's a great result in a not groundbreaking car.
And on that, I had an interview with Lando in Hungary, and we talked about his season so far and everything for our content that's going to come up on autosport.com over the summer. And he was laughing and saying, like, it still blows my mind I finished on the podium at Imola with that car. Like, I remember speaking to him after Bahrain. He was so, like, down in the dumps, like, oh, it's going to be a long season. And then Canada, they had another pretty difficult weekend. He was like, yeah, well, like, every weekend when we do well, it's just like luck basically, and we've not got quite everything right, we still don't know where we're going, and it is such a tricky car. So it does speak to how good his season has been, that he's still been able to tame it and get these good results. And because he said, it doesn't suit my driving style whatsoever. So if this is what he's doing with a more troublesome car, when they get everything hooked up, maybe around Lando a bit more, that's really exciting.
He's committed to the team long term. That's him now. He's a McLaren driver for the foreseeable. Can McLaren give him the car that he needs?
Well, that's the key point and the key problem, isn't it? Because McLaren's facilities, you know, we were talking about in the previous episode of the podcast about Alpine has been through its rebuilding. Aston Martin is still doing that. McLaren's in the middle of it as well. Like, its new wind tunnel isn't online yet. The team is still rebuilding, but I think it has had a shock. I think it's doing worse than it expected. We know that the things that went wrong in the Bahrain test, the brakes not working as they should have done, and all that added up and cost it a lot of, like, the chunk of the season effectively, because they're still feeling sort of shock of it when things didn't get off to that smooth start. And ultimately that is what it comes down to. I think I almost remember, like, thinking through it, looking back through his season, I almost feel like we're slightly being harsh with B+, because what else is he supposed to do? But just hasn't had that, like, you just don't get the sense that it's him grabbing it, if you see what I mean. Whereas in the past it sort of was. Maybe it was slightly easier last season, in terms of the fact that, you know, the Ferrari wasn't in the title fight, so, you know, he had more opportunity to shine. But yeah, you just get the sense that it's almost sort of plateaued rather than got worse or anything like that.
Our last lap Lando thing seems to have gone, you know, that excitement around, oh, what could he do? Oh, not much, you know.
But what I will just say in his defence, just in isolation, just one race, Spanish Grand Prix, when he had tonsillitis, and you saw him retching on the grid, like, to, you know, I spoke to him about that in Canada, and he said, well, it was like getting it. He was like, I just don't want to, I don't want to have not tried. Finished the first lap. Right, I've done the first lap. Do the next lap. Do the next lap. And eventually does a whole Grand Prix distance. And that, tremendous. But arguably, taking in isolation, the most impressive performance of all season, considering what he was up against.
Okay, all right, let's move on and let's talk about Carlos Sainz is a race winner, finishing sixth in the Autosport driver ratings on average 7.23, about the same for the reader average in sixth place as well. And what have we done with any rejigs?
We put him in sixth place.
And so the same, yeah.
And the same grade as Russell. And basically the narrative around the start of the season was, yes, Sainz was dropping the ball. Okay, he was punted into the gravel by Ricciardo at Imola, but, you know, he was off the pace. He's uncomfortable with this new car. I said he felt way happier with the old last year's car, which was much slower, and Australia, you know, burying in a gravel and retiring. Yes, bad mistakes, but one, he's on a great run of form. Obviously, that's headlined by the win at Silverstone, but Austria, Paul Ricciardo was a brilliant performance again last weekend. And last weekend sort of encapsulates it a little bit, is that when Leclerc had a bad qualifying lap, Sainz got second. Okay, it was behind Mercedes when pole was achievable, but he's there or thereabouts. Whereas, so they've converged, whereas the gap between Perez and Verstappen has opened up and opened up. So that's why it's a recent form. It's not a recency bias, but it's a recent form, which is why he's sort of just about in that top category.
When you're up against Red Bull, are a team that clearly identify their number one driver and they want to go and win world championships for teams and constructors, and Ferrari want to give drivers equal treatment, which is fair and understandable, and I don't blame them for that. But is that necessarily how you win in Formula One? And do you destroy the man if you say, right, you're the number two driver now?
In certain situations, it would have helped Ferrari. Wouldn't necessarily have helped Sainz, but I think at Silverstone, things like that, I think, yeah, you do. We talked about that very early on in the season with Sergio Perez and things like, you know, Saudi Arabia, what happened in Spain, things like that. Yeah, you do run that risk, but it pays off in this ruthless game. Quite often it does. With Carlos Sainz, I genuinely think maybe the most interesting character of 2022 so far, because what's really great about Sainz, I think he really is very honest and he really explains a lot. And it's not that he gives the game away, but he just fronts up to stuff in a way that you sort of wish other drivers would do a lot of the time.
I would put him in my top five most intelligent F1 drivers.
Wow, very good, very good. Great hair as well. You know what I'm like when it comes to hair. But anyway, because again, thinking back to that Bahrain press conference, Sainz just finished second. Ferrari's in the title contention, and he sat there. He just looked absolutely miserable, and his words back that up. And he basically said, "He's in my worst." I think I'm slightly paraphrasing here, but it's either my most difficult or my worst Ferrari weekend, where he'd finished second and team taking a 1-2. And you're like, "Well, what do you mean?" And basically, what he's getting at is he was like, "Charles can do things with the car that I can't," and it took him a long time to adapt to the new ground effect cars, especially what the Ferrari needed. And it comes down to fundamentally, particularly if you look at Verstappen and Leclerc. They will throw it in and they will handle it on the rear. And Sainz couldn't quite do that. It's whether it comes to just, do I need a little bit more actually throttle here just to get things under control, or the way I'm braking ever so slightly different. And he couldn't get his head around it. And it took him a long time, but he got there. And he was brilliant in Canada when Leclerc obviously had his engine penalty down the order and Sainz led the line. But he was like, right, I need a few more races before I can actually say I've really turned the corner here. But it was evident the next round in Silverstone, he was doing very well. He was caught out a little bit, unfortunate porpoising in FP3. We could see that through Maggots and Becketts. But he still was in position, and it ultimately came good for him. But also, just very quickly, I have a little confession to make when it comes to Sainz's ranking. I hold my hands up. First time in 2.5 years doing this. His rating is completely wrong. It shouldn't have been a 10. It should have been probably an 8. Because unfortunately, I didn't spot. He drove through the red light at Paul Ricard. It was his fault that he got a 5-second penalty there. So, you know, okay, that's as a catastrophic error as Carlos Sainz's. But you got to acknowledge these things. And that's the reason why. That's why we do these like half-term rankings, why we do the top 10 at the end of the year. Because, I mean, normally it's not as bad a mistake as that from my point of view, but you do find things out later on, right? But yeah, with Sainz, it's because of that, you know, it's because of that gap early on in the year that he's further down the order. But also, he himself has been harmed by Ferrari. Think back to Australia. First of all, he's very unlucky in qualifying. He was on to be up probably very close to Leclerc on the front row maybe when the red light comes out for Alonso's crash, right? Then on the grid, his steering wheel doesn't work, yeah. and they give him another one, and it's got the incorrect settings yeah. done. Like, I mean, I'm sure it's a simple thing that can go wrong, but that's the sort of thing you can't imagine Red Bull or Mercedes doing. And it's another example of Ferrari getting things wrong for its driver.
Yeah, and it has been interesting to see his evolution through the season, and now it does seem like he's getting into the groove a bit more with the Ferrari, which is good. And he said for France, like, he was so frustrated by that grid penalty because he's like, I feel like I'm at the best I've felt all season with this, and we saw that in the race when he was so quick. So I think it's going to be interesting what he does through the second half of this year, and kind of as he gets stronger and more comfortable with the car, but how that sort of goes against Ferrari, maybe thinking, oh, hang on a minute, have we actually got a shift more towards Leclerc if we want any chance of winning this championship, or if that ship has already sailed, which I think it has. And I think that, yeah, he has really performed well. It's really good to see he's a race winner this year. But I think for Ferrari, I think it's a bit too late for them to maybe be thinking let's back Leclerc, because I think it's damage already been done on that front.
And that is just going up against a team that clearly picks a number one driver and clearly favours them in strategy calls and everything else. Alpine, let's talk about those. Fernando Alonso, we've put him in eighth on the average driver rating with a 6.92. Thoughts on what anything we've done with him and Fernando Alonso's season?
His average for the driver rating is identical down to like 7 decimal places to Bottas, so they're both tied on 7th and 8th. So although we've put Alonso 7th on this list, again, they're pretty much interchangeable. But I'd say he's obviously, if it's Fernando Alonso making his own case, he'd be number one and a star. But I think 7th is fair, sort of led the Alpine team. Certainly the last, what, 6 races, he's been on a mega run of form. Obviously Hungary, there was a strategy that absolutely kiboshed his race, and you know, they both got mugged that beautiful.
But the
Ricciardo
fact they made
overtake.
It work, that yeah. was actually quite impressive as well.
They did make the
yeah.
hard tyres work, yeah. And some DNFs early on in the season, but apart from that, seems to have been there or thereabouts at the end of the race, now when the flag is dropped.
Yeah, and it's funny, like, he called out so much bad luck through the early part of the season. He did have a bit of bad luck, but there's a in-joke between me and Q called the Fernando Alonso tax, where everything is maybe about 10% greater than it actually is in truth.
And what's the great one, the Paul Ricard media pen?
Oh, this was what I was about to say, yeah. So there was a moment earlier this season, I forget which race exactly, but he'd had a setback of some sort, and he came into the media pen and he went, oh yeah, I can't believe all this bad luck. It must have cost me like 40 points this season, whatever. He goes around to the next broadcaster, can't believe all this bad luck this season, it must have cost me about 50 points or whatever, and it just got more and more, and by the time he got to us, oh, it's cost me like 60 to 70 points this season. It was just really interesting, and I think there is definitely credence to what Fernando's saying. Like, he has lost a lot of points this season through bad luck, and he's had some brilliant moments, like in Canada in qualifying, for example. Australia qualifying, had not been for that crash, where would he have been? So I think he's had it's been nice to see him sort of performing so well, and just interesting that we've got maybe that sort of punchy Fernando back again.
Always.
I can imagine you paying the Fernando Alonso tax quite a lot, and perhaps I should perhaps I should pay it a bit more as well.
Next, Bottas in our ratings, started the season, he's picking up 5ths and 6ths and doing pretty well. Dropped off as the season's gone on. Thoughts on Bottas from anyone that is strongly of an opinion of him?
I think he's done a good job, given that Alpha, the updates have been few and far between of late, and they've kind of tailed off, I think, in that midfield fight. They started so strongly. We know in pre-season, I think it was their filming day when the porpoising issue became so severe and blew a hole in the floor, and they were like, oh, this is a pretty serious problem we've got here. So for them to have recovered so well and been so quick is great. And I think also Valtteri, again, I had another chat with him sort of our mid-season sort of summer content and everything. He's just so happy. Like, he's in a really, really good place, and he said it's been his most enjoyable season in Formula One to date, despite all the success he's had with Mercedes. And he just is very comfortable, and I think can be more himself, and he's out of the spotlight, he's out of the shadow of Lewis Hamilton. I think he's really, really performed very, very well this season. So I think that once Alpha maybe get a few more updates on that car and take some more steps forward, hopefully we can see some of that early season form coming back. But he's been really impressive this year, I think.
Did produce the most embarrassing bit of driving of the season. That obviously very subjective, but in Miami, where he was watching Russell and Hamilton fight in his mirrors and effectively drove into the wall. Didn't damage the car, but he cost himself 2 positions to 2 Mercedes drivers. And bearing in mind that, I mean, ultimately it is a big mistake, because as we know now, or we knew at the time, the Alfa was the lightest car on the grid. It was the closest to the weight limit. The others are catching up, and that's why Alfa slipped down the order. So you really need to grab those big results when you can.
I think couple of things to acknowledge of Bottas. Speaking to both him and his teammate, he's absolutely been a team player at the moment. He's almost taken on a mentor role, getting his team up there. Zhou's performed well, I think, to a good standard. So the fact that Bottas is still ahead of him, you know, the gap has come down from sort of half a second to a tenth or two, but the fact Bottas is still ahead of him is why he scored well here. I also want to add that Alfa Romeo had just such bad starts. It's to do with the clutch and oscillations and whatever. So the races where he started 8th and finished 8th, that's included like falling down to 15th, and he's had to put in really good race runs to recover the ground. So that's again why Bottas of the like mid-tier is one of the mid-tier teams, is one of the better performing drivers.
And his teammate Zhou picked up some points this year. How do you think he's going this year?
The way he worded it to me was, I've lived about 10 years worth of racing in half a season, which I think is very true, because he obviously had that elation of getting that point on debut in Bahrain. And I remember the driver pen was where the drivers came out and met the physios, and you could just see he was so drained and just so happy and delighted, and it was a really lovely moment. And he's had spots of bad luck this season, and then obviously got that the brilliant points in Canada, again a track that he'd not been to before. It was a really, really good drive, and then that crash at Silverstone, and it's like to come back from that and deal with that in your rookie season and combine that with like all the doubt and sort of questions about him coming into this season and how he's come out for Formula One, and even he talks about racist abuse that he faced in pre-season as well. Like, he's weathered a lot and he's come through, I think, really, really well. And the points gap to Bottas may be quite big, but I think between the two of them on raw performance, actually it's a lot smaller. So I think he's earned his stripes, and I really hope he stays there for next season.
I think we have him slightly down the ranking purely because it gets really, really congested. Yeah. But in the wider perception of Zhou, I think he's underrated by a lot of people because he's actually had a lot of bad luck in terms of car reliability. I mean, he's performing terrifically in Baku, well ahead of Bottas, and his car breaks down. And without things like that, he might have had even more glittering results. So I'm really, really impressed considering this is his first year in Formula One, and also comes across very well. You know, in interviews, really good with us, really open. You know, that's really nice.
Dressed as well. And I would say that outside of the top three teams, he's like, okay, so he's down in 14th, which is low down the order, and his grade on this is C-, which I wouldn't be too pleased if I got one back. But what the way to contextualise that is, outside of the three teams, he's only behind Ocon as like the effective number two driver. So he's, you know, he's ahead of your Schumacher, the, you know, Ricciardo, whatever, Williams at AlphaTauri. So not an amazing result, but and I don't want to sound like I'm damning with faint praise, but I think we've done him justice there.
And just to talk teammates as we finish off the podcast, let's talk about teammate Ocon signing long term with Alpine.
Pretty okay.
Yeah, you just know, okay.
Again, it's sort of damning with faint praise there. As Matt said, exactly that.
Solid.
But
yeah.
The problem is that Alonso has got him in his pocket, but hasn't been able to show it because of various things that have happened. And you know, it's been a typical Ocon season. It's been up and down. It's also been away from the cameras a lot, and a lot of teammate controversy. If you particularly think to Hungary, it wasn't just into turn one. He had him off the track at turn five. Now he would say, you know, it was my corner, it was my right, so what I want. But it's just a bit weird to do that with your teammate. Nevertheless, still a very, very good Grand Prix driver, and I think does Alpine a lot of favours having him there.
And the other teammate we haven't mentioned yet is, oh, go on, yeah.
Daniel Ricciardo.
Finishing too often out of the points.
Where has he been ranked by you guys?
17th, and again, not recency bias, but I rewatched his Hungary qualifying lap. Like, he does not trouble an apex for the first half of a lap. You can see what's wrong in terms of on track. It's not like obviously he's slow, he's got that deficit, but you can see what's wrong. It's not being gotten on top of, and that's what's frustrating.
And you know why McLaren would have signed him when they did, as I mentioned on a previous podcast, is, you know, his star was in the ascendancy. Although you could have questioned that decision, that move to McLaren seemed so right at the right time. And that's a whole other podcast of what's gone wrong there. But in terms of the season so far, how are you feeling about Daniel Ricciardo?
Yeah, it's not been great. No. So it's been a bit of it feels like history repeating itself. And we know last year how he struggled, and he took that summer to go away. And he was very open at the end of the season about how he needed that summer to just like blow it off and just say, look, I don't need to think about Formula One for a month and just really reset. Came back for the second half of the season and was that much stronger. And yeah, he came back into the new campaign. And we thought, right, are we going to see more of that Daniel who never left, who won at Monza? And we've not. It's gone back to what we saw in the early part of last year. And it's been similar kind of struggles. But he, like, I asked him, do you need that summer again just to not think about F1 for a few weeks? He's like, no, I don't feel as desperate for it. Like, I feel sort of been quite content about things. And again, we've spoken about his future on the podcast before this, but it just seems like it's just not clicking. Like, and for all of the, oh, it's going to come good and we know where things are going wrong and we can find it, it's taken a long, long time to get any kind of progress and to see him at Lando's level, because right now he just simply isn't.
And I think 17th is about right. Yeah. I mean, when you talk about driver ratings, when we do it every race, you've got to see how did one driver compare to their teammate. And Ricardo's nowhere near Norris, and even when he is near him, he's generally behind him, or Norris has had a problem. That's the reason why Ricardo is ahead. So it's just, yeah, really disappointing. It harms, ultimately it will harm his F1 legacy, his reputation, things like that. And it's disappointing because, you know, he's a very popular driver, he's a very nice guy. But yeah, it's just, it is, as Matt said, it's the corner entry and the braking, it's the problems that were plaguing him last year. Even though the ground effect car is totally different, as Norris and Ricardo have said, there are certain elements of what the McLaren does. Even Norris struggles with it. I don't think he finds it a particularly easy car to drive, but he can do it much better than Ricardo.
So this is absolutely damning with faint praise, but if you look at the order, there's only a couple of drivers ahead of Ricardo that have had like a huge shunt. Ricardo has spared himself that. He hasn't fired himself off into the wall, but it's not a long list of positives to
Did
take from the season.
Practice in Monaco, but at least it was in practice. Yeah. Didn't cost him a race result.
Yeah. And he'll know that. He'll look at the traces against his teammate, and he'll know. And he's under no illusions about where he is slow. Formula One drivers have the most supreme confidence in their own ability. In their own head, they're all the best drivers on the grid. But at some point, you're going to be thinking, like, a dose of reality is going to hit him, isn't it? So.
And bigger, like, twice we put him as our number one driver in the world. 2 years we've done that for Ricardo. So having him 20th and 17th on this list is sad.
Yeah, it's a bit heartbreaking, isn't it? So, okay, and our final teammate we haven't talked about yet. On my list, he is 14th, but I would add it's because we have to put Nico Hülkenberg in the ratings, and he is 7th. So minus a place, he's 13th, but that's still not really a great result. So the final kind of teammate that we haven't talked about yet before we finish off the last couple of teams is Sergio Perez. And again, he's got his future for the first time ever in Formula One really laid out in front of him. He's doing the right role. But let's talk about his season a little bit at Red Bull. What do you think?
I think it's up to a point, it was exactly what Red Bull needed. Yeah. And that's why he got the contract. And I genuinely think he totally gave the game away on the way into the podium.
Oh, like, completely.
With the fact he signed a contract when he says, I signed too early. And the person who confirms that with just his eyes is when Christian Horner very quickly just looks at the camera like, oh, did they hear that?
It's quite the
did
office,
we get away with it?
It?
Yeah. it's brilliant. Up to a point, exactly what Red Bull needed. As I explained earlier, his performance in that stage is that makes Verstappen's performance seem not as good and a bit sort of questionable, because he's doing a very, very good job. Has had his down moments. You think the Monaco crash in qualifying, not brilliant. Having to be asked out of the way from Verstappen, who'd thrown it off the track in Spain, not great. But also was very unlucky in Saudi Arabia. Terrific pole position. Yeah. Unlucky with the safety car timing. Also, though, did sort of get lucky the other way, because the FIA should have stepped in and acted when it came to science and the safety car line. That said, it's all been undone a lot of the time because he's still got that propensity to qualify down the order compared to Max. Bear in mind, this is a car that can be qualifying on pole position.
And that's the thing he's had all throughout his career.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's never been known for qualifying. And it's interesting. I think that's why he's got that tyre whisperer reputation, because if you're qualifying down the order, you're more likely to end up on an alternative strategy. So therefore, you're going to have to be good with tyres to make it work, which, to be fair, he is very good at. But then the weird things, like letting that tyre temperature drop in Baku and therefore losing out to Verstappen there. But it's the way things seem to have gone away from him recently. Like, Paul Ricard was a shocking performance. Yeah. I think it's joint lowest with Leclerc in my ratings for that one, because he was so far away from Verstappen. He got so easily beaten by the two Mercedes cars, and then he completely messed up the VSC restart. I know he and Christian Horner tried to blame it on the FIA systems, but the FIA, well, it happens exactly the same to all the cars, and Russell nails it. He doesn't have a massive lose a massive amount of momentum, nearly dropping the car as Perez did. So it's lately, it seems to be going away from him, and maybe the summer break, hopefully for him, will come at a good time. But as I said, really good highs, took a great win in Monaco. Yeah, hopefully that summarises Perez's season.
He's been a really compliant deputy as well. So even like Hungary was a great case in point. Verstappen spins it. Perez moves his car out the way to not run into him, and then just sort of just pushes Russell out wide, so he only loses one position. And again, there's been a couple of other races where he stepped aside, no problem. What I will say is, I know the quote that popped out over the Hungary weekend was Marco talking about, oh, he's already on holiday, which supposedly Horner said, that was my quote, I just didn't expect Marco to tell it to the world's media. But Perez needs to sort of decide now. There was no dispute over him getting a contract. There was no sort of will he or won't he. But his season, he needs to decide. He's in a camp at the minute where he's fallen behind being the good number two that he was. He needs to now make sure he doesn't fall into the Albon Gasly tier of the last few seasons. And that's what he's straddling at the minute with these last three races.
And in terms of where he finishes at the end of the season, there is every chance that Charles Leclerc might not finish second.
His quotes in Hungary were everything's open still. Like, everything's open in the title race, and he didn't want to sort of entertain ideas of like, oh, are you going to sort of like be the man to support Max's title race? Like, that's not already been a thing. But it's he's very, yeah, I think that start of the season was fantastic, and it did fully justify why they signed him and why he's got that contract now. He said that as the car was developed, it kind of moved away from him a little bit, but they did some work over the Hungary weekends to try and bring it back towards him a little bit more. So I think that, yeah, the second half of the season is going to be, I think, as Keith said, very important to sort of work out where is he now with Red Bull. But I think the first half of the season, for the most part, has been pretty solid from Checo. And yeah, I think you look at Monaco, you look at Baku, and there's a moment where you thought, oh, could he actually get into this title race maybe? But yeah, if he could end the year a solid second in the championship, that has to be his target now. Like, if he ends the year P2, I think he'd be pretty pleased.
Rewind to the beginning of the season, great to see Kevin Magnussen in a Haas and Mick Schumacher racing as well. Where have we put those in your final order? What grades have you given them?
Magnussen is in 12th place in our order, so three positions down. And that was something, you know, when we compiled this list, he was one of the bigger movers, because it's just sort of like we do it with top 50 or any ranking thing, if you argue someone up, you have to argue someone down. Yep. And Magnussen fell victim to that one. Schumacher's 15th. In the driver ratings, he's 19th, because you think back to Saudi, where, you know, massive shunts and a few irredeemable sort of errors and being so far behind Magnussen. But then there's that couple of runner points. I mean, 15th probably still will cop some flak, because we know he's a popular driver. But the fact is that Haas were considering, you know, what to do with him for the future, and that is reflective of some pretty low lows this year. But he's improved with the pace and some great racecraft. And the fact, you know, the meme of him coming out angry is because he was right to feel aggrieved, because they were some strong performances over Austria and Silverstone.
I think with Schumacher, it's an example of how, and again, it's sort of similar to Perez, you've got to rate them on the job they're supposed to be doing. So yeah. Perez's job is to be as close to Max Verstappen as possible, but not beat him, right? Mick Schumacher's job is to get early points for Haas, because that was rapid in Bahrain and Magnussen did it magnificently. And then it's get points where you can. And he just wasn't doing it. Now, he's unlucky in Bahrain. Ocon tapped him around at the start. Mm. Actually ends up having a big impact on his result at the end, right? Miami crashing into Sebastian Vettel, that's why his ranking is low down. That's why he's down in 19th in the pure numbers average, right? Because it was just he lost his head at that point. And then you have a massive accident again in Monaco. It's the Saudi situation, right? Yeah. You can't crash massively like that and not let it affect your score. And there was big pressure on him, and I think the team were very honest about that. It's like, we have to see something soon. He has to finally step up, or his seat was in danger there. He did do it. He was brilliant at Silverstone. It would have been, you know, very unfortunate if Max Verstappen's defence and his sort of half attacking had all gone wrong. What's interesting there is that I think it does unfortunately show what kind of Schumacher he is. I don't think Max would have defended as he did against his dad. And also Michael would have just gone, hang on a minute, what are you doing? You know, I'll have you off the road and it'll be your fault. But Mick wouldn't have done that. So it's sort of interesting there. But still, let's take the positives. As I've said, you know, we don't think there are any bad Formula One drivers. They're just different rates of good, right? At least he does seem to have stepped up. He has made the most of some of those opportunities, and well done to him.
Yeah, I thought his Austria weekend was very good, where he was qualified well. Then in the sprint, he was kept saying, like, I'm faster and faster. And there was a little bit of needle there, actually, between the two Haas drivers. Yeah. But and then I think executed it very well in the race, and you look at performances like that and you're like, okay, you can do it. Like, that really, I think, has proven a lot of people wrong about sort of saying, oh, is he ever going to score points, and like, where what is he doing? So I think now in the second half of the season, he's got to really, he'll get the update from Spa onwards on that car, and really just sort of say, right, this is my seat, this is why I'm on the grid, this is what I can do, and deliver it week in, week out. Because, yeah, we've seen glimpses of it this season, but it just needs to be a bit more consistent.
Pierre and Yuki at AlphaTauri, how are they doing? And they seem to be having fun, if that counts for anything. But what have they got to do in the second half of the season to make this a good year, do you think?
Lots. As a teammate pairing, they're like collectively bottom as it, Gasly 16th for us, Tsunoda 19th. Tsunoda, some massive shunts, some big errors, even at the weekend, spinning over Hungary. Okay, it's sort of an anonymous one, but he ships three places and he shouldn't have done it. And in the same way that Norris annihilating Ricciardo helps his order, the fact that Gasly and Tsunoda, the competitive order, can flip quite often in what is, let's be honest, a really bad car with the 803, that's what brought them both down together. The fact that Gasly, a race winner, hasn't distanced Tsunoda, but Sonoda's not having a great season either. So it's sort of they've held each other down.
What they're finding is that it's a far less consistent car to what they had last year. And Gasly compared it to 2018 when he was with Toro Rosso. And some weekends, the car would absolutely be hooked up and perfect. And we saw that in the second race of that season in Bahrain, where he finished fourth and everyone went, oh, this is Red Bull's great new hope and Honda have finally made it work and everything. And the highs are high, but the lows are pretty low and they're more regular. And yeah, we haven't seen that kind of... I know, like, Pierre himself, like, he's very pleased with the job he's done this year, and he's trying to be more and more of a leader at Faenza, but they are really, really struggling. They waited for so long for those updates and put them on the car, and they've not really done a lot, and they're still really confused by what it's doing. Tsunoda, I actually asked him in France when we spoke, I said, what would you rate your season out of 10? He said, I'd give it a 7, but before Silverstone and Canada, where he had two bad weekends, he gave 8.3, which is quite precise of him. But I wonder what now after France and Hungary as well, because it's sort of, yeah, it's a bit of a slide, and you're kind of wondering. At the beginning of the season, he seemed far more consistent, like he knew a bit more what he was doing, which is something he's said himself. But now we're sort of seeing a few of those errors slip in again.
I think it's with Gasly, as Luke said, the inconsistent car is reflected in his driving, and unfortunately that reflects poorly on him. Like, for example, making that track limits mistake in qualifying in Hungary, right? Yeah. But with Tsunoda, some of the errors have been shocking.
I mean, the one in Canada was just...
straight out of the pit lane. He's really poor, like really, really poor. And then tapping his teammate around at Silverstone, it's like, what saves him really is that we tend to say 3 years... in the third season, you expect a massive step from the driver. Yeah. So if this is still happening in a year's time, because we expect him to carry on at AlphaTauri, let's face it, then I don't think he's got a long F1 future.
Karma, France Toss, for mugging off my question in Austria.
You're still bitter, aren't you, Q?
Well, I read it in the transcript. It was savage.
Hilarious, isn't it? Yeah. At least when I got Sebastian Vettel's one-word answer when I said, do you want to go into politics? He was like, no. He did apologise, at least. France was just like, nah.
Let's talk about Vettel and Stroll, and how you think that team is coming along this year. First, we didn't see Vettel at the start of the season, of course, once he finally got in the car. And now we know his future as well. So what are your thoughts on those two drivers?
So yeah, so that's why you mentioned Nico Hülkenberg briefly. Yes. Because I think you're looking at the averages,
of course,
that they're
averages
on the website.
Nico's got some scores.
So he's seventh in the standings.
Well, no, it's because the website just takes them to your numbers.
It literally
website,
just averages out the races.
The magazine has a little footnote that says doesn't include
right.
Nico Hülkenberg.
So on the website at the end of the season, Hülkenberg will probably be in the top 10 just by that clerk.
Yeah, he will be, yeah, because he's on an average of seven.
Exactly,
yeah.
That,
some
right.
Good races.
Well, Vettel, I think there's a stat here that I think is ultimately going to sum up his F1 career, right? Brilliant, but a little bit slightly disappointing in terms of the sort of racing statistics, is that if he starts every race now to the end of the season, he'll end up on 299 races, which is a little bit like, a little bit, but maybe he'll like that because Jackie Stewart, 99 races, yeah. Maybe that sort of plays into the Vettel legend a little bit. But yeah, you know, it took him a long time to get to grips with the car, but when he did, he's been phenomenal. Lance Stroll has just been Lance Stroll. Not all that much good to say. But what particularly frustrates me is that it's his qualifying. Like, you know, the Aston is sort of up and down, but he never gets the most out of it. But then he does actually start very well in races and he does go forwards. So give him credit for that. But it gives that false thing, you know, the sort of, he got the most overtakes of the season. Well, it's unfortunate. You know, the drivers at the front of the field have got fewer cars to overtake. And you know what I mean? Like, it's a false statistic.
Seb won that last year, didn't he?
Yeah,
Aston Martin.
Exactly. But then again, that showed it was him underperforming in qualifying there, right? But yeah, it's the car that's really also central to the story, right? They're one of the big teams that totally changed their concept, and it took them a little while to get on top of that. But yeah, not brilliant from either of them, but about where they you'd expect them to be. Vettel ahead and doing okay. I think, Matt, where have you got him in the order?
We've got him 11th, and actually, again, it was I think that was one when I did my own order and then consulted you. I think I maybe even had him in top 10. You rightly sort of corrected that, but you know,
sorry, Seb,
impressive performance. And it's that thing with the qualifying has been bad for both of them. A lot of that had been Aston completely messing up its tyre strategy, and they're going out with two cooler tyres, but you know, that's what they're being told. But then it's sort of a driver error as well, because you look at some of their outlaps, which yes, we're sad enough to look at, and you realise that they're not negotiating traffic particularly well, so they are slower and they're compromising themselves. So it's just one of those, bit fiddly, bit yeah, not anonymous as such, because there have been some good performances, but there's nothing that's like really dragging them into the top 10.
I think Alex Albon has had a season that he should be pretty proud of. New ownership there, and obviously that pays into who their second or other driver could be next year. So just a couple of thoughts on Williams drivers.
I think Alex has performed fantastically this year as our Grand Prix editor, and Alex Albon has also done a very good job. I took a moment
Thank
to drop.
Thank you very much. But,
what about the assistant to the Grand Prix editor? How's he doing this?
Albon has, I think, done a really good job, because when he came back to F1, there were kind of the questions about, like, is he damaged goods? Like, did the year out affect him? Did the way Red Bull treat him have an impact? And he came back and he got on with it. And I mean, Australia, where he made that incredible strategy work, where he pitted, I think, on the penultimate lap and snared a point, and we were watching it thinking, like, can he actually do this? And he got it done, and it was brilliant. And then in Miami again, like, he was taking a car that should not be in the points and doing really great work with it. So I think he's done a really, really good job this year. I think he deserves all the credit. I think that by the time this podcast is published, I think he'll be confirmed as a Williams driver for 2023 as well, which is richly deserved. It's tailed off a little bit recently. I think they, again, they've been waiting on those updates. They've arrived and they're still sort of trying to dig into what they can do, but he wants to be targeting Q2 on a pretty regular basis now. So I think Albon's done a really great job. Latifi, I think he's had struggles this year. We know it's likely to be his last season in Formula One, it looks like. And he said until Silverstone, like, he just couldn't get around the car. He was really, really struggling with it. They did a chassis change, and he said since then he feels like he's taken a good step forward. So yeah, I think really though, you look at Albon and you say he's I think done all he can really so far this season.
Little snippet sort of related to Albon in terms of that, when he did pit on the penultimate lap in Melbourne, comes out of the pit lane, there's just people in the pit lane, he shouldn't be there.
Bit,
if you go back and watch the video, it's a little bit dodgy there. So I think the FIA needs to be a bit hotter on that. And actually, it comes back to, I think it was Paul Ricard, I don't know what team it was, but there was a celebrity they had in their garage, went out and has got a video on their social media of Lewis Hamilton coming back through to Parc Fermé, which is not good if someone gets run over and hurt. But anyway, that's completely not to do with either Alex Albon or whoever was coming down the pit lane. Paul Ricard, Alex Albon, I think has done the job. I think he comes in, he sort of leads Williams with his pace, but I worry, does he lead them in the way Russell did off the track? You know, I think the problem still is that Alex Albon is too nice a guy. I think that George Russell, just go and watch that Netflix documentary from his first season where he lays into Williams after the practice at Silverstone. I just cannot see Albon doing that. And then with Nicholas Latifi in the other car, wildly inconsistent, saw it over one single lap in Hungary. Not happy with the car in the wind. It's understandable why the team gave Albon the updated car first, and I think he's really going to struggle to keep his drive at the end of this season.
As of Silverstone, they've had a new chassis, and he's not saying the old chassis was crap, but either the way it's been assembled or certain configurations of parts that they've swapped over have made the difference. But I don't buy his full claim, and having sat down and spoken to him and Dave Robson, head of Williams Performance, Latifi, much more so than Dave Robson, is saying that's responsible for, I found 3/4 of a second per lap, and that explains a cabin to Albon, and looking at the data, it doesn't quite support it. And then there's the other element, which is finishing well behind your teammate, and then there's a shunt. So, you know, Saudi Arabia crashes in qualifying, team rebuild a car, and then he bins it in a race in pretty big style as well. And then, although it was 50-50, According to the FIA, I believe that it was him at fault in Paul Ricard. He didn't leave with Magnussen anywhere to go, so they were going to have the crash. It's still, and you could argue that, okay, if his, you know, last season and this year the car's been so bad, or he's had a poor season, so maybe he's a bit race rusty in that context. But you know, he still committed the foul. So again, it's not like a cataclysmic season, but
just cumulatively, everything. You, when you're arguing the cases for the other drivers, he just kept shuffling down, and he's at the bottom as a result.
Well, there we go, guys. Thank you so much. Enjoy your summer breaks. May you find a beach or a cold beer somewhere. You deserve it. Although you'll be marathon training, I presume.
Marathon training, so no beer probably. But buying a flat as well, which is...
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year. I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true. Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
It's very scary, but yeah, we'll see. So not pretty much time off over this summer. But
thank you very much for listening to our Half-Term Report podcast, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
Message and data rates may apply. Guys, got hair loss? I know what you're thinking. Should I shave my head, comb it over, wear a hat? Just stop. This isn't 1970. Keep your hair and your confidence, because Bosley, America's number one hair restoration experts, can give you your real hair back permanently. Check them out today, because they're giving away an absolutely free information kit and a free gift card to anyone that texts EASY to 203203. Dude, you don't have to look like your dad, because this isn't your dad's hair loss treatment. People all over the country trust Bosley because they're ahead of the curve. They use the latest technology to give you your real hair back. And the best part? Bosley's permanent solution is protected by the Bosley Guarantee. Let Bosley show you for free how awesome your hair could look with an absolutely free information kit and a gift card for $250 off. Text EASY to 203203. That's BASY to 203203.
Sports Social Podcast Network.